Welcome to another episode of I Just Want to Be Included. My name is Veronica Olson, and today I continue my conversation with Sarah Steinhauser. We continue talking about growing up in Christian homes and what it's like to come out queer when you're still very much a part of a Christian family. As always, I ask that you listen with an open heart and mind. You may not like or agree with everything you hear on this podcast, and that is okay. The goal is to bring humanity to difficult topics and to hear how other people are experiencing life. Nothing said in this podcast is to be taken as professional advice. Everything stated is based on personal experience, thoughts, and opinions. Please always find professional help in your community to deal with any issues you or your family might be facing. Enjoy the episode. So, this process of deconstructing, for you, did that kind of begin when you were deployed in the military?
Yes. I started doing the very first step of deconstruction, which is questioning. So I started doing that like end of high school and then before my deployment. But that middle deployment was when it like a huge bomb went off and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. And did you have people to talk to about that in the environment you were in at the time? Or was it just something you were kind of doing internally?
Luckily, I did have my my best friend. We were actually able to deploy together. And I was able to talk to her about it, and which was helpful to an extent. But there's just a lot of things that I couldn't even understand myself. So I didn't even understand like what I was questioning or anything. It was just so complicated to even begin.
Yeah. And it is a process. Right. Like you said previously, it's not like you do this over a couple months and you've got it all sorted out. Like it takes years. And, you know, in the Christian world where I still, you know, very much in, deconstructing has such a bad connotation to it. And I try to tell people it's not a bad thing. You know, it's actually a good process because you can kind of flesh out why you believe what you believe. And so for some people, you still land in the world of Christianity. It just looks different. And for other people, you may not land in the world of Christianity, but at least you're kind of really going through and defining why you believe what you believe. Because we grew up in a time, you know, in a place where it was just handed to you, or you were expected to take it and believe it and run with it. So I don't see deconstruction as a bad thing, because it's challenging you to really look at, why do I believe what I believe, and what's really important and what's not important. And so, but it's a long process, and it's not a comfortable one.
And you know, and you can even look at it as like, and I try to tell people, like, you can look at it as like a physical aspect too. Like if you compare it to, you feel your body just feels like, I don't know, your body's telling you, you need to lose 5 pounds or something. You want to eat healthier because you want to feel better. So you start just kind of thinking about the things that you're doing throughout the day and you're doing through your life. And you kind of go through like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? What makes me feel good? What do I, so it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that analogy, because it's making changes that are going to be good for you, you know, that are going to help you be a healthier person in general. It's just going to look different. And it's change, which is scary in general for people, but change is usually good. It's just the process of getting there is messy. It's very messy. So was there a certain point where you had to make a decision about breaking ties with people and just kind of say, you know what, I need to cut off this relationship. I need to cut off this relationship in order to kind of move forward and be who I need to be authentically.
Oh yeah. I cut off a lot of relationships and a lot of family relationships. And I kind of I kind of cut it off at the head of, so I cut off my relationship with my grandma and okay. and my family. Oh my gosh. It was like I dropped a nuclear bomb on the family. Sure. And it was awful. I was being blamed for the family falling apart and fighting, and nobody's going to grandma's as much as they were going before because of all the stress and tension. And I changed it up. I changed the whole family up because I stepped away. I stepped away from the norm. I'm like, I'm not going to be here anymore. I'm not going to be part of this. And that shook my relationship in every relationship in my family in different ways.
Sure. Sure. Because you were seen as a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, so, and then other people in the family who are gay, they wouldn't cut ties. They would hide that part of them around the family. But I wasn't willing to do that after a while. After a while, I'm like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. And I'm not going to sit here and feel the guilt and all of that anymore.
Yeah. And I'm going to guess that that's not a decision you made lightly.
No, I mean, I went through a period for at least a year where I was going in and out of testing, like medical testing, because like I couldn't figure out why like my chest was hurting so bad.
Okay.
My head was hurting so bad. Like I was getting all these medical tests done and they're like, there's nothing we can see that's wrong. Well, it ended up just being from making this decision. It's like it was just destroying me from the inside.
Yeah. Very stressful. Incredibly stressful. Yes. And I want people to understand that too. When you do make these decisions about cutting ties, it's not born out of like these quick decisions that don't have any feeling or emotion behind them. It's coming to a point of like, you're exhausted and I can't do this anymore, right?
Yeah, you're backed in a corner. It's the only thing you have, you know, that the only thing left that you can do. And as awful as it was, I honestly wish I would have done it sooner, but I just wasn't in the right headspace. But I would do it all over again to be where I'm at now.
Okay. And so at what point did you feel like I need to live authentically? Like, is there a certain point you can look back and say, you know what? I need to be my authentic self and this is what I'm going to do. Or is that a certain point you reach, or is that like a process?
It's a slow, for me, it was a process, but the end of the process was like a big bang.
Okay.
So I kind of went through like, so when I first came out, that was a process in itself. And then it kind of settled down after a while and then everybody just ignored it. And then everybody was able to ignore that I came out and it's like, okay, Sarah's just Sarah. That's fine.
Right.
But then I started dating girls and it's like, okay, well now we got to deal with this, but we'll just call her girlfriends the roommate. Right.
Right.
So then they were able to bury that. But then when we had our first child, they couldn't put that away. They couldn't explain that as like, oh, Sarah and her roommate decided to have a child together as roommates. Like that's just not how it worked.
Yeah.
So that was like the big bomb where it was at that point. I'm like, no, we're done with this hush hush and push it away. Like, this is my child and you're either family members of this child or you're not family members at all.
Right. Yeah. That probably just brings a whole different level of like, you have to move on and really make boundaries when you're bringing children to the situation, I would think.
Oh my gosh. It's a whole nother level of boundaries because you're not worried about yourself anymore. You're worried about how it's going to affect your kid. And that kind of puts a different level, a different layer on it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so one thing I wanted to talk to you about as well is your parents, as grandparents, have taken your kids to church.
Yes.
And I've watched my parents do that with my nieces and nephews. And for your perspective as a parent, how did you reach that decision of like, all right, it's okay if you take my kids to church, even though that's not what we're not really identifying as a Christian family, or that's not part of our family life. How did you get to that point where you let your parents do that?
It was hard. It was, really hard at first. And honestly, the only reasons the first couple times they took them was out of necessity of I needed them to watch the kids. And with their faith, they're not going to just not go to church to watch the kids. The kids are going to church or it's nothing.
Yeah.
So, and it would keep me up at night. And a lot of it was there was still like guilt and shame on my part, because now my kids were going to this institution that I left, and you know, it's almost like a part of me is going back in there, and I hated that so much. And it took a while, but the kids enjoy it, but that's also part of, that was also a struggle to me, because that's what churches do. Churches make it fun. They make it fun, so people want to be there. So,
well, especially kids, right?
Especially kids, right? That's how they get you. That's how it starts, you know. And I understand that. And so, but they liked it, and so we kept letting them go to church, and it wasn't our favorite thing to do. But I'm no longer religious, I do obviously acknowledge the religions, and religion, there's a lot of good religion has done, you know. I can't say that religion is all bad, you know. There's good and bad. So I don't want them to be in a situation like I was, where this is what we believe, this is what it is. I want to show them the different options. I want to, you know, give them all the information and let them kind of decide. And I want them to question things on their own. So that's kind of how I've, like, I guess, come to terms with having my kids go to church with my parents sometimes.
Okay. So you're not like actively going to cut them off from that, you know, exploring what options are out there. So
this is
a starting place for them. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to, but then I did some digging. And I'm like, that's no different than everybody telling me I had to be a certain way.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want that. I don't want to be that. So.
Right. Yep. I can totally understand that. So the next thing I kind of wanted to talk about was there's a couple of things. So there's an interesting thing that's happened over the last, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years, where, you know, you have churches that outwardly identify as accepting of the queer community. So you have these rainbow flags outside the doors and these signs. And I'm curious what you think about that. Churches who are actively saying, hey, you know, this is how we view this one topic and you are welcome here. Do you think that's helpful or harmful?
Overall, I'm going to say I think it's helpful. And this is something, honestly, that I'm like in the middle of working out with myself, because this is a thing that has come up with our nonprofit. This is a big one too, where there are churches who want to support us and then churches who obviously don't. And then you have people who are coming to us like, well, which churches are queer friendly or not? And it's hard, because I have a lot of religious trauma, so I already know that I'm biased in it. And so I have a hard time like working with people in that sense. But I've actually been listening to on YouTube. I subscribed to her. Her name is Kelly R. Minter, MINTER.
Oh, yes. I know who that is. Yep.
And it's been really helpful for me in that sense, because she comes from a very religious background and has walked away from religion, and talks a lot about religious trauma, and talks a lot about like the churches and the accepting churches. And so she's really kind of been helping me with that. And there was a segment she did with accepting churches versus affirming churches, which is a big difference, because the accepting is the love the sinner, hate the sin. Come on in. We're going to be friends, but you're also going to hell. So, and then there's affirming that's like, no, those passages are misinterpreted. You're fine. We're all fine. This is, you know, you're on the right path. We're all going.
You're truly accepted here. There's no like come in and we hope to change you kind of mentality.
Exactly. So in my opinion right now, I think it depends on what the true intention of the church is. There's a church in Brighton that does that is an actual affirming church, is like one of the only affirming churches that I'm aware of at this point in Livingston County, who they don't just say like, hey, we're all on the same playing field, we're all on the same level, but yeah, they speak out against anti-queer agenda and stuff like that. They, at different events, they'll pass out books for on same-sex couples for kids and like all this stuff. So like they're out there actually doing the work to undo the damage. And like, to me, that's a true affirming church, because they know that this target pop, this population is being targeted right now, and that they need a lot of help right now. So they're stepping up more than just sticking a rainbow sticker on their door.
Right. Yeah. And one thing that drives me nuts is when we see these churches that have these signs saying, you know, all are welcome here. Yes. And it drives me nuts because no church should have to have that for their door.
Exactly.
That should be a given. And that we're at a place where people even have to put that sign up. I'm like, oh, you know, that should be a non-issue.
But I know.
It absolutely is. And so what I've been thinking, and how we start building bridges and getting, there's such a divide right now. And it's going to continue, especially because we're in an election year, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's no secret that queer community and anything especially to do with gender identity is used as a weapon. And as, you know, a way to get people on your side. How do we start even trying to build bridges and communicate with people and educate people?
The most basic thing we can do as humans to improve anything is to just talk to each other. It's absolutely mind-blowing the amount of people who are so against anything queer, whatever, they don't have a relationship with a queer person. The amount of times I've created a relationship with somebody for whatever reason, and they'll come back to me months or years later and be like, I was never supportive of the queer community until I met you and got to know you, because now it's not just this imaginary evil thing that's out in the world that the news is telling us about. You're a person, and like, I love you, I have this relationship with you, and now what I'm being told doesn't feel right anymore.
Yeah.
And then it's just learning. Like, there's a lot of these unbelievably damaging myths about the queer community. And if people just take, especially the transgender community, like, it's absolutely insane. These myths that they're coming up with about how dangerous they are. And it's so backwards. It's so dangerous for the trans community because they're being targeted so much, but with the misinformation out there, it skews everything. So it's like, you just sit down and talk to somebody, or take some time and look up some accurate information. And that's a big part of our nonprofit. Like, if you have a question, it doesn't matter how offensive you might think it is, or if you're coming from a place of trying to understand and you want to learn, come to us and we will talk about it. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Why do you think you have these segments that are so heavily targeted, whether you're talking about transgender, anything with gender identity, anything with the queer community? Why do you think it's such a huge target right now?
I think it's because society as a whole is starting to accept it more. And that scares me because it's change. And on a smaller level, especially the generation, you know, younger generations, the school kids, it is more accepting. That's not to say that everything's great and everything is equal and there's no problems. That's not what I'm saying at all. But like, when I first got married, I'm divorced now, but when I first got married, it was illegal in Michigan. It wasn't recognized in Michigan.
Okay.
So I was federally married, but statewide, I wasn't married.
Gotcha.
But then that all changed. And then now different adoption rules and stuff, and like parenting, like the hospitals now, at least at St. Joe's, instead of doing a mom and dad, they have parent one, parent two.
Okay.
So like, there's all these little changes that society is seeing and it scares people, which is starting these huge fights and all these crazy stories that you're hearing.
Yeah.
They're trying to scare people because it's changed.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. That means when you do have something that society is slowly making a norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the same thing happened with divorce. Divorce was such a taboo thing. What in like the 70s, 80s, it started becoming a little bit more popular, and now it's normal. But before it was all talk. It was a huge, essentially crime. Like you can't do it.
Yeah,
and you're shunned from the church. And now half the marriages end in divorce. And now it's like, okay, it's normal now. So, give it a decade or two and it's probably going to be the same thing. Like the queer community is probably going to get a little more slack and then somebody else is going to get the heat because it's going to be another societal change.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And that is such a good point. And certainly I know this is your goal. And one of mine is just build relationships and talk to people and do more listening than talking actually.
Yes.
Do more listening than talking.
And listen to listen.
Yes.
Because people don't want to listen to respond or argue, but just listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. All right, Sarah, thank you so much for talking with me again. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your personal experience. It has been so helpful to me. I know it's going to be helpful to other people, and I would love to keep having you back to have more conversations because this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and I know it's yours, and I just want to build bridges, you know?
Yeah, and I'm glad to be a part of it, and I love what you're doing. I think it's great.
Thank you. All right, Sarah, take care, and we will definitely have you back another time, all right?
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today, and a huge thank you to Sarah Steinhauser for coming on and being willing to share parts of her story. The link to her website, Queer Families of Livingston County, will be available in the show notes. And as Sarah has stated, it's okay to ask questions. They're more than happy to answer questions, to provide information, and to help educate people about the queer community. Hang in there. We're all doing the best we can. Have a good week.